welcome to NC Asian American Ministries podcast. My name is Sammy Ju, and I'm your host. This podcast is to highlight the life and ministry of Asian American leaders and to network them for advancing God's kingdom in North Carolina and beyond. Today is the last episode with Granville Chris. Granville is the lead pastor of Concord International Church in Charlotte. How are you, Granville?
I'm good. Doing very well.
Thank you. Now, I want to hear from you about your future visions for your ministry. Now, what are the potentials for next generation of Filipino or Asian Americans to advance God's kingdom?
That's a very good question, and I think that's something that we actually really have to think about. I think one of the unique aspects of Filipino history is the fact that we were under Spain for 300 years, and then after that we were sold to the United States. And so we get a lot of what makes Hispanic culture tick because we actually lived that culturally. But also what's interesting is we're also one of the very few Asian countries who developed an educational system based on English. And I think that's a huge asset because, you know, one of the most unique things about Filipinos is that they can go anywhere in the world and they can adapt and they can fit in. What's particularly interesting about the next generation of Filipino or Filipino-American Christians is that, you know, whether they go back to the Philippines or whether they stay in the U.S. or they go overseas, they have an opportunity to talk to other people because, you know, most Filipinos are fairly capable of communicating in English. Mm. And that allows them to be effective wherever they are. Mm. So I think we really need to take the time to really develop our next generation, especially in terms of their relationship with God and in their knowledge of God's Word. They may not become ministers in the traditional sense, but they are ministers in the sense that they are able to administer God's grace to other people through their lives, through their speech, and even in their fellowship. And so that's, I think, something that we can pay attention to because they are the bridge between several cultures. And that's something that we should be excited about and not be scared of just because we don't understand them. You know, I'm sure that as a parent of kids who are, you know, in their second generation, like their second generation, for, you know, from you guys, you were the ones who immigrated. Sometimes it's scary because we don't understand, like, you know, what's going on with them. What are they thinking? We never taught you how to speak that way. But instead of being completely scared of the fact that they don't look or even act anywhere near what we expected to be, we should be excited of the many possibilities because they can connect much more broadly than we could.
Right. So you see the great potential for this next generation. Now, what keeps the next generation from living that potential?
Well, I mean, a lot of it really is just fear. Mm. I think many of us care so much about what other people think about us. I think sometimes what makes it difficult for us to be able to step up and, you know, fall in line with what God has for us is because we are afraid. that maybe we will be rejected, or that what we're doing is going to be dismissed, or maybe we're afraid that, you know, the results won't come quickly enough. I think this fear is one of the most paralyzing factors for any Christian, and regardless of what generation you're from. I think really it is human nature to want to seek approval. It is human nature to want to see success. But I think one of the things that we have to remember, and I think we have to be firm in this conviction, is we have to remember our identity as God's people. The beauty about our relationship with God, and this is so different from any of our relationships in the world, is that, you know, when we read the passage that says, even while we were still sinners, Christ died for us, that should be a powerful reminder that, listen, even before you knew God, even when you were still an enemy of God, you already had His approval. So regardless of what you do now, you already have His approval. He's not going to reject you. He's not going to disapprove of what you're doing. So ultimately, if you still care about what people think about you, remember what God thinks of you. That even when you didn't belong to Him yet, He already loved you. Even when, you know, you were in your sin, He died for you. So there is no failure state when it comes to the ministry. Because regardless of what you think, regardless of what other people think, regardless of what you feel about what you're doing, God has already assured you that He still loves you, that He approves of what you're doing. And so we can overcome this fear if we are secure in our identity as God's children, because He has already approved us, He has already accepted us, and this was even before we accepted Him.
How can first-generation immigrant help the next generation to grow as spiritual leaders, not as a parent, but as a disciple maker?
Well, I think one of the big things that we need really is this understanding that this next generation is going to be different, understanding that their methods are not going to be the same. And I think what we need to remind each other of sometimes, and I really hope that I don't come across as critical to the first generation leaders, but we need to remember that we, and to use the metaphor of marriage, we are married to God and not to the method, right? Our relationship is with God. Our loyalty is with God. Our commitment is with God. Not to our tradition, not to the techniques that we know, and not to the systems or methods that we know. So we need to have that level of understanding in order for us to be able to work together. I think for me, the biggest hurdle between the first and the second generation is that understanding. And of course, I also say this to the second generation. You know, you may think that some of the things that they're trying to tell you are old-fashioned or whatever it is that you think, but you know, they were there before you. They were building the foundation before you came around. And of course, they inherited that foundation from the generation before them and the generation before that. If you take a look at your life story, and you remember the person that shared the gospel with to you, remember that somebody else shared the gospel to that person, and that somebody else, you know, shared the gospel to that person, and somebody else shared the gospel to that person, and you can trace that all the way back to Jesus. And if we see it that way, we'll start, I think, to think less of the differences between generation and start to think more of the continuity of the people. And I think this needs to be stressed more than it already is. The reason why we're here today is because there was a long line of people who listened to God and obeyed Him. And so it's our turn now to listen to God and obey Him. So for the next generation to continue, we need to be the people that will be obedient to God, for them to be obedient to God, and for them to be obedient to God, and so on.
I visit different Asian churches, and I see a lot of Asian next generation, second generation, or third generations are leaving their parents' church.
Mm-hmm.
They're leaving Asian churches, and they join majority churches and those places. Now, if this next generation stays in their parents' churches, how can they help Asian churches to continue to grow?
I think it depends on really how you would define growth and how you define success. I think, honestly, if we take a long-form view, we're going to understand, and I hope this does not come as a shock to anyone, but every church dies, right? None of the original churches that we read about in the Bible are around today. And if we understand the life cycle of a church, I think we will also understand that sometimes we need to recognize when it is time to adapt or to change. So let's say, for example, there is no question that a first-generation church needs to exist because, you know, let's take your story, for example. You came from Korea, you moved to the U.S. Maybe you're not familiar with American culture. And, you know, I'm sure that many Koreans, when they first come to the United States, and not just Koreans, but Filipinos, they're looking for people who share the same culture and language. And so they should be able to worship together in a way that they're comfortable with. And usually that's with our own language. You know, it's not like I would go to Mass and purposefully look for a worship service in Latin, because I don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't express stuff in Latin. So in the same way that, you know, first generation churches come together simply because of their need to survive as people, by getting together with people that they identify with culturally, the question becomes, what's next? What happens when there's a second generation? And maybe the second generation doesn't need that cultural identity as much. So the question for first generation leaders is, are you willing to change, or are you willing to let them go? And it's a tough and challenging question. Because I haven't lived long enough to see a whole cycle. So I don't know necessarily if I can give any advice regarding that, but I have enough of a historical perspective to at least say that, you know, anytime this happens, this question pops up, like, what are we going to do to keep our church growing now that we have a second generation? You have to ask yourselves, well, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you willing to adapt? Because the identity of the church is actually going to change. It's not a first-generation church anymore. It's now a multi-generational church. And so now you have to ask yourselves, are we going to keep singing our songs only in Korean? Or are we going to start singing in English and in Korean? Or are we just going to start singing in English only? And those are challenging questions that each congregation is going to have to deal with, because not everyone is going to feel the same way. I'm sure that there's some Korean churches who don't want to get rid of, you know, the Korean songs. And I'm sure there's some Korean churches who are very willing to change just because they see growth differently from the first church. So I think that's something that I don't think has the right answer, but there are right questions to ask. And I think the most important question to ask here is, you know, as our church goes through the generations, are we trying to maintain its old identity, or are we going to adapt to its new identity?
At the World Conference, July 2017, mm-hmm. you mentioned about Central Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you define what the Central Commission is and why it is important?
Okay. So, The term Central Commission is actually a term that my father likes to use instead of the Great Commission. Now, for those who are not familiar with the Great Commission, it's that passage in Matthew chapter 28. And I like to start from verse 16, because that's where that story starts. So it's from Matthew 28:16 to 20. And most people are familiar with it just because it's the part that says, go and make disciples of all nations, teaching them to baptize in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. And the reason why my father argues that this should be the central commission is because, and I agree with him, is because this is not just a great commission. Mm. This is not just a commission among many, but this should be the central commission of our lives. It should be the motivating force for everything we do as Christians. That is, to make disciples of all nations, so we introduce them to Jesus Christ. We baptize them, which is basically something to do with identity. So we don't just introduce them to Jesus Christ, we encourage them to identify with Jesus Christ. And then, of course, the third is teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. We don't just tell them to give themselves to Jesus, we also start them on the process of transformation. This is, I think, something that we miss. When it comes to evangelization, sometimes we just want the people to pray the prayer, right? The prayer of salvation. But there's no expectation of obedience. And when Jesus gives us this central commission, the end game here is so that those people who become the people of God will not just become, will not just take on a new label, but it is so that the people of God will become the obedient people of God. I had a friend when I was in Prague. His name was Christopher Pretorius from South Africa. And he challenged me one day by asking me to think about all of those things that God commanded us to do. And so we had a discussion about, like, yeah, God told us, you know, to worship Him, to love each other, all of that. And then at the end of our discussion, I mean, we came up with a lot of things that God commanded us to do. But at the end of our discussion, he said, okay, now that you've listed all of these things, what are the things that you can do in heaven? And what are the things that you can only do here on earth that you can't do in heaven? And ultimately, at the end of that conversation, we came to the conclusion that telling other people about Jesus is not something we can do there. It's when we're in heaven, we can worship God. When we're in heaven, we can love one another. You know, when we're in heaven, we can pray. But here on earth, it's the only place where we can tell others about Jesus. And I think the whole point of that conversation was not to say, so stop worshiping. I mean, that was not the point. The point was not to stop doing those things that we can do in heaven. The point was to stress the urgency of the Central Commission. I think some of us put it off for far too long without realizing that, you know, a time is coming when we're not going to have a chance anymore to be able to tell others about Jesus, to be able to teach them to obey Him. And so that's why it's important that for us, the Great Commission is not just a Great Commission. It is a Central Commission that drives everything we do. So just to give an example, our worship, right? Sometimes we just think of it as, you know, coming together and singing songs. And, you know, like, our challenge for worship leaders is, you know, think about it differently. Think about it theologically. I'm trying to make two big points about this. First of all, these are not just songs, right? One of the things that I think every pastor realizes when they've spent enough time in the ministry is that even though they prepare very hard and even though they preach the best sermon they've ever preached, people are going to remember the songs more than they're going to remember the sermons. So we challenge our worship leaders, guys, you're teaching theology here. Mm. You are often more effective than the pastors at teaching theology. So when you teach, what do we teach? And when we proclaim things through our songs, what are we proclaiming? So the first point is, let's pay attention to every aspect of what we do as Christians. And I'm just using worship as an example. But the second point here is, you know, when we do stuff, do people understand what we're doing? I think one of the biggest mistakes that Christians tend to have is we sometimes assume that when we talk about Christian things, people understand what we're talking about. You know, so like when you ask someone, hey, are you saved? You know, maybe they're thinking, saved from what? You know? And so the clarity of language is something that I think we have to be very mindful of. And I like to use this illustration. Sometimes we just like to use Christian language because it sounds good, right? So when we're at fellowship and somebody's praying for the food and they're praying something like, Lord, please sanctify this food. And like sometimes I hear that. I have actually heard someone pray that. Lord, sanctify this food. And I'm thinking in my head, wait, did this food have any sin against God that requires the sanctification of Jesus Christ, right? And so we have to be self-aware of the way we're presenting the gospel. We have to be aware that not everyone is talking about God all the time. We have to be aware that not everyone understands what we're saying. And so really the point here is, when we start thinking in terms of the Central Commission, we need to recognize that it should affect every part of our lives. And if the goal is to make disciples of all nations, the nations need to be given a chance to respond, and they can't respond if they don't understand what you're saying. Mm. And if the goal is to baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, we have to give them a chance to identify with Jesus Christ. And finally, if the goal is to teach them everything that He has commanded us, then we have to teach them properly so that they can be truly obedient to what God has revealed that He wants in our lives.
Wow. Thanks so much, Granville. It's been a joy. It's been a blessing for me to get to know you and also get to know your ministry and the philosophy. I'm very excited for what God is going to do in your life and your ministry in the future.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thanks so much. If you want to hear more podcasts from us, find NC Asian American Ministries at your podcast and subscribe it. You can listen to our weekly podcast update. Thank you for listening, and I will see you in the next episode.